Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hour number two, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. You know, I went with a different color today on the air. I don't even know what this is. Joy, what would you say this is?
That's like a salmon.
Yeah. Well, I'm from the coast of Washington. That's salmon fishing territory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
I'm running out of sweaters, so.
You are?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's L.A., so it's not that cold here.
Not a lot of sweater shops in Los Angeles.
Although, it got hot again really quickly. We were all complaining for like 1 week.
Yeah.
It dropped below 60, and now it's hot again. So.
Yeah. So Doug Peterson coaches the Philadelphia Eagles. He won a Super Bowl. He out-dueled Brady and Belichick. And a lot of people made the mistake of considering Nick Foles a great player when he did that. No, Nick was an average player who had a great game. I still contend. I think Doug Peterson's a really good coach. He went on Philadelphia radio, you know, as you do after you play a game in Philadelphia, a big radio station. What is it called? WIP. It's very popular. A lot of people yell and scream at each other. And Angelo Castaldi was the coach, and he asked him a question, and then Doug got in a bad mood, and he talked about what's happening to the Eagles and what's gone wrong and what kind of mood he's in.
I'm pissed off. I'm pissed off at myself. I'm pissed off at the way we played, and it frustrates me. It frustrates me to no end. And we have too much pride, and I have too much pride. These players have too much pride. We work our ass off during the week. It's frustrating. It is frustrating, and blame it on me all you want. I'll handle it with the players. You can blame it on me. I'm a big guy. I can handle it. That's fine.
You know, it's funny. We do this a lot. We do it with politics, and we do it with sports. We're trying to find the problem. The guy. Blame her. Him. The. Philadelphia's got a lot of issues. It's not one guy. It's not Carson Wentz or just Doug Peterson. They lost a great offensive coordinator, Frank Reich. Frank Reich left them, and with Jacoby Brissett, a beat-up Andrew Luck and Philip Rivers, he's 23-18. Doug Peterson in a crappy division is now 21-19. Like, Frank Reich was a big problem. We can blame Carson Wentz. You can even blame Doug Peterson. I thought he got worked Sunday. I thought he had a bad game as a coach. It happens. Andy Reid's had bad Sundays. But in the end, this is not a problem. The reality is, when Frank Reich was there, Carson Wentz was a young quarterback and getting better and better and better, and he's not quite as good. He's just not. Their offense, and then you throw in the chaos of their offensive line issues and their wide receiver issues. By the way, you don't want to know what Matt Ryan is in Atlanta since Kyle Shanahan left? 27-29. Jared Goff was almost the biggest bust in NFL history as a number one pick. And since Sean McVay took over, he's 37-19. Like, coaches matter, coordinators matter. At any given time in this league, there's three or four coordinators who are exceptional. They usually become head coaches. You know, Kyle Shanahan took four straight quarterbacks, three or four different teams. They all got better. He goes to the Niners. He gets Jimmy Garoppolo to a Super Bowl. Frank Reich, with kind of marginal quarterback play, a beat-up Andrew Luck, Jacoby Brissett, old Philip Rivers, unathletic, has got a better record than Doug Peterson. So everybody's trying to find the problem. It's not a problem or the guy or the problem. Philadelphia's got several. One of them is they lost a great coordinator, and their quarterback had a really good relationship with him. He's never been the same. All right, here we go. It's our Herd hierarchy, the top 10 teams in the NFL. There's a lot of teams I like that did not make the cut, and here we go.
Herd hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to college. Number 10.
This is I'll go with Arizona, but I thought they were lucky to beat Seattle and Buffalo. They were outplayed by both, so you get the win. I'm not giving you a ton of credit. But they are the number one total offense in the NFL. They've won five straight games with 30-plus points. They're 4-1 in that span. So it's an exhilarating offense. It's multidimensional. They can run, they can throw it, they can go deep, and I put them at number 10.
Number 9.
The Ravens. Listen, the reality is they're missing a lot of good starters, and they are 0-6, trailing by 10-plus points. But they still have the number one scoring defense in the league, including Pittsburgh, and the number two rushing offense, and they're going to get healthier. So I don't think they're a Super Bowl team today, but they're still, in my opinion, a top 10 team. Put them at 9.
Number 8.
Listen, Green Bay to me is a little overrated. They're very Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams dependent. They couldn't even get 80 rushing yards against the Jaguars. They're not a physical team. They're very limited. They've held opposing quarterbacks under 300 passing yards in every game this year. Some of it is you don't have to throw on them. But I think they're so good at running back, so good at quarterback, so good at wide receiver, and a couple of nice defensive players up front. But I do think they miss Blake Martinez, the linebacker. I do think you can run on them, but they have enough stars that they deserve to be at number 8.
Number 7.
The Rams. By the way, how good is this secondary? I mean, Jalen Ramsey just took DK Metcalf out. They've got two good young safeties. They found another corner in the draft. They have never lost under Sean McVay when they lead at half. And they're the first team to hold Seattle to fewer than 27 points this season. Number one ranked defense and total defense in the NFC this year. This is not an offensive team. It is not. They're getting to the quarterback. They have the top corner, the top defensive lineman in the league, and I think they have the top secondary in the NFC. I put them at 7.
Number 6.
But Miami beat them. And Miami's special teams are excellent. Their defense is excellent. In their 5-game winning streak, they're allowing 17 points a game. And I think if they played Seattle again, they'd beat them because now they've got Tua, who doesn't make mistakes. They have the 5th best point differential in the NFL this year. I watched them go to Arizona and win and really outplay Arizona. And for stretches, at least, stretches bottle up Kyler Murray in stretches. Coaching, defense, special teams win in this league, especially around Thanksgiving and beyond. I've got them at 6.
Number 5.
I'll take Buffalo because I do think their defense, which was a little bit of a mess for about a month, they now have 9 takeaways in the fourth quarter this season, most in the NFL. And I think their defense is kind of finding its way with a very good defensive coaching staff. They've forced 6 turnovers in the last couple of games. They outplayed Arizona. So they went on the road and they outplayed Arizona. Call it! Arizona beat Buffalo. If they played in Buffalo, Buffalo would win. If they played in a neutral field, Buffalo would win. A Hail Mary does not mean you're better. I think Buffalo is a really good team, and I think they've shored up some of their defensive issues.
Number 4.
Tampa Bay. Now, why would I put them there? Well, they're the only team to win 3 games this year by 20-plus points. When they're on, they are really good. They've got 7 or 8 elite players. Only Kansas City can match their high-end talent. And now they've been inconsistent. But if you look at them last week, they flexed. They showed off against the Carolina team that had been a tough out. Listen, they're 0-2 against the Saints. They're 7-1 against everybody else in football. It's a really good team.
Number 3.
The Saints. I think they'll win with Jameis Winston. They're on a 6-game winning streak. That's the longest in the NFC. Alvin Kamara leads the NFL in scrimmage yards. Their defense was a little uneven early. I think they've played very good in the last couple of weeks. I don't think they'll take a major step back offensively with Jameis. I think they're going to be fine with Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston. And listen, they have shelled Tampa twice. So I'm putting them over Tampa.
Number 2.
Pittsburgh, only remaining undefeated team. Most sacks in the league. Best sack differential. I don't think anybody denies it's the best front 7 in the league. Their offense has been a little hit and miss. I did think blowing out Cincinnati was impressive. Cincinnati's got a win. They've been a little bit of an annoyance to some of the good teams. They totally dominated Tennessee. Steelers at number 2.
Number 1.
Kansas City, let's just not even argue. They have the number 1 point differential, and I think they would beat Pittsburgh if they played right now anywhere. Pittsburgh, Kansas City, neutral field. I think they've gotten everything right. I think their defense is top five. I think their offense can play power smash mouth football. They can clearly go over the top. They're less reliant on Patrick Mahomes than they were even last year. I think from week 12 of last year, this is the best football team in the National Football League. And I think they have a chance if Mahomes stays standing up and they can re-sign some of these offensive linemen. I think you have a chance to have another dynasty off a dynasty. We get one about every 10 years. We may have back-to-backs from New England to Kansas City. So Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly. I'm a big fan of Brian Kelly. I've said this before. I'm always impressed, not with a trust fund kid that makes money. What's your background? You know, I can see the end of your movie. I don't get to see the beginning of it. But if I hear about the beginning of your movie and it's tougher, I think more of you later in life if you succeed. Notre Dame's an academic power. It is, let's face it, it's in cold weather territory. Alabama, Clemson's not. It's a hard place over the last 30 years to get 9-10 wins a year. They don't duck people. They play Georgia a couple times. They'll go out and play like legitimate bowl teams every year. And Brian Kelly, to me, is their best coach since Lou Holtz. And I've watched him two or three times this year. I think outside of maybe Alabama, I think they match up with everybody. They with that offensive line, they may match up with Alabama. They may. So we're going to be Brian Kelly. I'm a big fan of his coming up next.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Saturday on Fox, it's a battle of Big 12 title contenders as K-State takes on Iowa State at 4 Eastern, then Arizona and Washington clash in Pac-12 action at 8 Eastern. College football Saturday beginning at 4 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Do you know who has the longest winning streak in college football? Notre Dame. 14 straight wins. They've won 10-plus games in the last 3 years. And when Brian Kelly first took over at Notre Dame, it was so intense because Notre Dame's pressure is so much. And I thought, he's a good coach, but man, does he want to do this forever? He's never looked more comfortable. They've never been on more of a roll. They've never had more NFL bodies. And Brian Kelly is going to join me live now from a great place to join me live from, Notre Dame football headquarters. You know, it is true. Brian, I think you look comfortable. I think you look happy. I saw you you played a close game against Louisville, and I watched the post-game interview, and you were very at ease, and it was a windy, choppy day. And I got to be honest, the first 5 years there, Notre Dame's a lot. It's a lot of pressure. You look more comfortable. That's what I see. Have you found kind of a groove, Brian, expectations, staff? Because you look like you're in a good place.
Yeah, I mean, I think early on, it's like anything else. You come to Notre Dame and the pressure is not to lose. And that's the wrong way to look at it. You've got to really come here and think about the production and how your players are competing. And don't even look at the scoreboard. And I think we spent too much time thinking about, you know, winning games. And when it's all about winning, you play tight and there's just too much anxiety. I think we've gone to the point now where it's about our production and how we play on Saturdays, and the rest takes care of itself. And it's gone pretty good for us over the last 4 years.
I ran into Ian Book's dad in Utah this summer, and I said, I like your son. And I said, but you know, Brian's going to push him, and this is what Brian's going to do. He's going to push the quarterback, and I watch Ian and he delivers for you. Is this your, all things considered, is this your best Notre Dame team?
I would say it is. You know, we had some great players on the 12th team, the 18th team, and even 15. Will Fuller on the outside, CJ Procise. I mean, there were some great players in 15. But I think if you talk about physicality, if you take about the basic premises of putting together a really good football team, it's O-line, D-line, and speed on defense. And I think those are the three areas that separate this football team.
You know, it's interesting. I had a PJ Fleck on, a guy I have a great deal of respect for. His team's kind of unraveled. I know James Franklin. I love James. His team's unraveled. Yep. I know Harbaugh. It's not been good. So I'm watching some of these really good coaches, and it is with COVID, it is unraveled, coach.
No doubt.
You have not. Do you look back over the last 6 months and think, boy, I'm glad we did this, because whatever you're doing, I've seen a lot of good coaches. It just comes unglued here, and you haven't. Why do you think that is?
Oh, wow. There's a book to be written about this. And there's every step along the way has been one to navigate through with clear communication. Our first meeting is what I would say was probably the most important. And we said, look, you guys need to understand, you should not be here unless you understand that you're going to have to sacrifice a lot. Things that you've never sacrificed before, because this is going to be difficult. And I think that first meeting kind of set the tone that everybody that was there was going to have to pay attention to the detail things if they wanted to fight this virus and fight for a championship. And I think that helped us in our first meeting.
You know, first of all, I think you've become an offensive line machine, and Notre Dame offensive linemen, it should be noted, are getting paid. Getting paid, yeah. Folks. So,
get that message out, because when we call for that big endowment check, we want them to remember that.
But it's interesting because I've seen you play Georgia twice. They're go either way games. I saw you beat Clemson, and there was about a 15-20 year period where I was like, oh, that's not a good space for Notre Dame. And so you are going into homes and you're competing against Clemson, Bama, and LSU and Georgia for players in Ohio State. And it's tougher at Notre Dame. Academics are tough. It's a small town. The weather's not always grand in November, December. But do you feel like the way you're rolling now, that you can go in against Saban and there are players you can beat him on?
Yeah, again, we're very transparent in terms of who we are and what we're looking for. So we're going to be clear when we talk about why you would come to Notre Dame. Here are the things that you would get by coming here. And I think that that's where we'll have our niche. Now, again, I think what we can point to is that we have an incredibly physical football team on both sides of the ball. Yeah. And we've developed those players to move on to the NFL as well. So I think that there's a great niche there. You're going to come to the Midwest. You're going to expect to play in difficult conditions. So, this is where we can really, for us, get into some of those homes and talk about how we can develop you and get you ready for the next stage. And we've done really well with those kids that understand Notre Dame and want to move on to the NFL, especially those linemen.
Yeah, Jalen Smith, by the way, Will Fuller, Quentin Nelson, Chase Claypool. Quentin's going to get paid a lot. And guards generally don't. He's going to make a lot of money. It's interesting. You've won everywhere. And you've not just won as a coordinator, you've won as a head coach. And the great thing about college football, Brian, is that you change lives. It's an incredibly rewarding experience. But I have to ask this. You're good enough to coach in the NFL. It's not a money thing. It is a itch thing. It's a Pete Carroll say. Do you think you'll ever scratch that itch?
No, I think I've always looked at the possibility. But I'm at a point now at Notre Dame where I can control the roster. I have a great understanding of what our process is here. They give me the opportunity to set this program up and make all the decisions as it relates to how this program runs on a day-to-day basis. You don't get those opportunities in the NFL unless you're Bill Belichick or Andy Reid. So for me to give up all of that to go into the NFL, as much as you want to be able to coach the best players in the world, this is such a great opportunity at Notre Dame. It's one that you can't give up.
I got to talk about one of your opponents. So I follow recruiting because I'm a dork. And I saw this kid. I got to tell you something. That quarterback, that freshman quarterback for Clemson, Joy and I were watching him. I saw him on tape 2 years ago. And I'm like, I can't believe he's a high schooler. Now, everything's a little bit of a fastball. But did you go – you recruited him too, didn't you?
Yeah, until he gave us the temperature and the wind chill temperature in South Bend. DJ is just a wonderful kid. And of course, he's at a school where Notre Dame can recruit. It's a great profile school for us. But yeah, we knew we weren't in that running pretty early on when we knew weather was going to be a factor there. But he's what a terrific player, and what a tough problem Dabo's got with those two guys.
No kidding. That's your backup. Hey, continued success, your schedule, you're at Carolina, you got Syracuse at Wake Forest. It sets up well if you're focused. You know how much respect I have for you. Brian, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, and congrats on that win over Clemson and NBC.
Thanks, Colin. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet. Brian Kelly, great football coach at Notre Dame. And here is Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Yeah, that South Bend weather hits a little different.
No, it's different. I mean, like, you for some kids, like, if you grew up in California or Florida, there's some kids who just don't. I get it. I'm watching that game. I'm watching that Cleveland Browns last two home games, and I'm like, not interested.
I mean, how about the Ravens Patriots game?
It's like when I can't see the players.
It looks cold. You look cold at home.
Yeah.
Looking at how cold they are.
Right.
But you know what? If you can play in that weather, you can play anywhere. So Tua has been very successful as a starter in the NFL so far, and he said he thought the transition from college to the pros was going to be a lot more challenging than it has been.
Wow.
In an interview with Pro Football Talk, Tua said, "I expected it to be a lot harder. Not that it's not hard. I would say I'm comfortable, but a lot of that starts from practice and just kind of a combined thought process for all of us together and to all kind of be on the same page. It starts from practice and then translates to the game." This actually makes sense that he says this. Obviously, it's going to sound like he's saying, "Oh, so easy to go from college to the NFL." But when you're prepared, everything is easier.
When you have Brian Flores for a top coach. I mean, you talk to Rams players about Sean McVay,
and
they don't hit once the season starts. So, like, if you've got the right coach and the right culture, it isn't as tough as it is playing for a bad team.
It's absolutely true. People ask me all the time, like, do you get nervous before you go on air? And I'm like, no, I'm not. The only time I'm ever nervous is if I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know what's happening. What are we going to do? That's when I get nervous. We're prepped for days, for hours before the show. If you're prepared, there's nothing to be nervous about because this is what you do. Like, this is what we do. This is what they do. They play football. So if you're prepared, he said he talks to his offensive line a lot. Like, they're in constant communication. So the more that you are prepared, the easier it's going to be. Obviously, the speed of the game from college to the NFL is going to go up tremendously, but he knows what to do because he has good coaching. I am obviously thrilled with how the Dolphins are playing lately, and they have the Broncos this week, which Broncos at the Jets, Bengals, and then the Chiefs. We'll see how that one goes.
I like Miami again. They create turnovers, and Denver obliges.
Yeah, Drew Lock has been very gracious with the turnovers lately. So the Raiders, speaking of the Chiefs, the Raiders defeated the Chiefs 40-32 in Kansas City back in week 5. I love this story. After the game, the Raiders team's buses circled Arrowhead Stadium as if to take a victory lap before heading to the airport.
Love it.
And ahead of their second matchup this Sunday, Andy Reid and John Gruden spoke about the incident.
Listen, they won the game, so they can do anything they want to do. That's not our style, but we'll get ourselves back, ready to play.
Andy Reid mentioned a couple times the victory lap you guys took in KC. Is that something that you think about this week as far as bulletin board material?
Not really. I mean, you can find a smart aleck bus driver in Kansas City who made some snide comments when we got on the bus. Maybe that's why we drove around the stadium, to tick him off. You know, this is ridiculous. Next question.
That is so funny.
I love it. I absolutely love it. It's obviously not a story, but it's just funny. It's
first
funny
of all,
to ask about.
The NFL, since I was a kid, the Raiders have always been the rebel of the league.
Right.
They were always. I remember the first time I saw the Raiders, I thought they were wearing practice jerseys. They're all ripped and tattered, and their owner, Al Davis, fought the league, and John Madden guys would be sitting on helmets, and this is who they've been. So the Raiders are perfect in Vegas because it's an outlaw city.
Yep.
And this, I think the NFL is better when the Raiders are good and a little obnoxious and a little loud. It is perfect. Every league needs a villain. And I don't see the Raiders as a villain, but around the league, they're a little contrarian to the corporate NFL way of doing
business.
Absolutely.
And you need those brands.
Of course.
In every league. I think, and it's not a knock on Derek Carr at all, but I think if Derek Carr had a little edge to him, then they would fully lean into that. But Derek Carr is such a nice guy. Like, he just doesn't, he's obviously a great player, but he doesn't fit that, like, Raiders attitude.
Big Ben feels a little more Raider.
Yes.
He's a little scruffy. He'll tell you what he thinks. He's got a little drama. Big Ben to the Raiders, he feels a little bit like,
I mean, even someone like Baker.
Yeah, I mean, Baker would fit.
Even like Joe Burrow, who's not a big talker, but just has like a tiny little bit of edge to him.
But it's a funny story.
I'm really looking forward to this game. It is a funny story. It's just funny listening to the two of them talk about it.
College football's always, in my mind, been better when big city Miami and big city USC are a little obnoxious.
Yeah.
Baseball's better when the Yankees are winning and are a little obnoxious. It's okay to have somebody that pushes back on the corporate shield of the NFL.
I'm a big fan of villains.
Yeah.
I don't think you can really have a strong story without a strong villain.
Yeah.
You got to know who to root for, who to root against. And they do have to be a little bit over the top, a little bit flamboyant or obnoxious. So this is a little bit of edge. It's fun. Finally, James Harden has made it pretty clear he's trying to get out of Houston. He reportedly declined a contract extension that would have made him the first $50 million a year player in the NBA and is focused on being traded to the Brooklyn Nets. The Rockets and the Nets have reportedly been in contact, but there's not been any meaningful dialogue yet. Harden is under contract for multiple years, so Houston has the ability to slow play this process and flesh out offers. And also try and change his mind. They want him to be there long term, but he wants to win a championship, so he's trying to get his way over to the Nets because he thinks that they have a window to win a title, and he's trying to be there.
I will say, no league has more of its stars willing to give money back.
Can't say it's a money move.
It's not a money move, and I've seen that Kevin Durant gave up some money, and I've seen multiple players. Anthony Davis gave up some money.
LeBron, Wade, and Bosch gave up money when they teamed up in Miami. No one pays attention to that, but it's also a very unique league in that, well, most leagues now, big-time stars have a lot of endorsement deals, but
right.
You know, you have crazy money with shoe contracts and things like that, so it becomes a little easier to sacrifice a, you know, 10 or 20 million here or there when you're making $50 million a year on shoe contracts. And I don't know what his contract is, but I will say this is fun for, like I said, it's fun for us. It's fun for people to get to talk about the league. I don't really necessarily feel bad for Houston in this case. Like, Houston had an opportunity. They made moves to get stars and they couldn't get it done. I think there's plenty of fingers you can point at to make that case. I don't know if this works unless everyone buys in. To your point at the beginning of the show, while basketball is a very much a star sport, you have to play your role.
Yes.
Like, yes, you need a star, you need a leader, you need the number one guy. But if everyone else buys into the role, you can absolutely win championships and have a dynasty. But you have to buy 100% into your role. And I think that has a lot to do with not only the stars buying in, but having a coach that can convince you that this is what's going to work. And if they can put that together, I think the Nets will be a problem. But that's a big if.
Yeah, Kevin Durant's the best player of the three. If Kevin did a little bit of a LeBron where he holds his teammates accountable,
yeah.
And if Kevin's healthy and hitting it, then I think they all kind of, they could potentially fall into place. That's a, you know, let's see Kevin post-injury, but I mean, Kevin's the best player of the three.
I think he's going to be fine post-injury. It's just a matter of what you want. Like, if you say you want to win a championship, then there's sacrifices that have to be made temporarily to win a championship.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
You know, it's interesting. We were talking about the, so Drew Brees has got multiple fractured ribs, going to miss 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, it sounds like a month out. But I was saying is, Jameis Winston will now play, and we view Jameis as inconsistent. But Brady was the most consistent quarterback of my lifetime. Like, the same, you got the same crap every week. Last year, Brady in New England didn't have one game with multiple picks. He's already got two this year. Is that Bruce Arians? So were some of Jameis's issues Bruce Arians, who's a high-risk quarterback? And I went and looked this morning. So I'm not going to talk about the teams, but look how inconsistent Brady's been. In week one, he was bad. In week two, he wasn't great. In week three and week four, he was amazing. In week five, he was bad against the Bears. In week six, he was fine. Week seven, he was great. Week eight, he was really good. Week nine, he was awful. And then he was amazing last weekend. So he's got two terribles, two not very goods, one fine, and four greats. And so Brady is Mr. Consistent, and he's been wildly inconsistent this year. So Jameis, who we view as inconsistent, is that a Bruce Arians thing? Because if Tom's now inconsistent, what is Jameis if he goes to a much more, I would say, sort of efficient, detailed coach who will not tolerate? No risk it, no biscuit. That's an Arian saying. That's not a Sean Payton saying. So it's interesting. Chris Broussard's around the corner. We got some NBA stuff to talk about. Big deals happening potentially.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Time to change up your wireless provider. Can use the same phone number, but grab your phone, dial #250 and say my name, Colin Cowherd. It's Pure Talk USA, 2 gigs of data, $20 a month. Chris Broussard, co-host of The Odd Couple with Rob Parker on Fox Sports Radio, NBA dude for us, the guy we lean on, joining me now live. So, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant, it makes a good movie poster, but let's start with this. How in God's name, what can Houston get back? I mean, is this just one of those things that an agent throws out there, but can it happen?
Well, there's a few things to say about that. You mentioned an agent throwing it out there. People around the league are saying, whoever put it out there, and it probably was agents. This goes for Harden and Westbrook. They did their clients a disservice because they made it that much harder for the Rockets to trade either one of these guys, because now teams know you got two disgruntled superstars on your hands. Where if the Rockets make a call to Team A and say, hey, we've been close, but we haven't gotten over the hump. We're thinking about going in a different direction. What would you give me for James Harden?
Right.
Now you're in control and you get a better package. Right. And so that whoever put it out there has hurt the leverage of the Rockets. But as far as can this work, I was just talking with an executive an hour ago, Colin. What they're saying, the word around the league is, now I haven't heard this from Kyrie or anybody close to him, but people around the league are saying Durant wants Harden and Kyrie does not.
Oh, boy.
All right. And because Harden would likely have the ball in his hands, right? Here's another thing for Kyrie to think about, or for those that are looking at his situation. Who is James Harden close with in the organization in Brooklyn? Mike D'Antoni, who was just hired as a coach for the Brooklyn Nets to assist Steve Nash. D'Antoni said James Harden is the best offensive player he's ever seen. D'Antoni, every offense he's created has had one guy handling the ball and creating the offense for everybody else. Who you think he's giving the ball to in Brooklyn if they get James Harden?
Right.
It's Harden.
Right.
And I don't see Kyrie wanting to be the third best player on a team. He's never been the third best player on the team.
Yeah.
And so it would be a chemistry experiment to the nth degree. Now, I got to say this. As skeptical as I am about it being able to work, I mean, you'd have to give him a puncher's chance because that is some overwhelming individual talent.
Yeah.
But it would be a chemistry experiment of the most extreme order.
Yeah, I don't think Kyrie wants to hear in the huddle over and over again, hey, you're going to be a decoy here, Kyrie. We're going to set it up for Harden and Kevin Durant. I don't think that'd play well very long.
Set up in the right corner, Kyrie. Set up in the right corner.
I will say this. LeBron created player empowerment. I've always defended players who are mobile. You and I in our careers have been mobile. I think I'd be a hypocrite. But I do wonder, in the last 2 years, if this deal went through, Kevin Durant, Harden, Kyrie choose New York, AD, LeBron, Kawhi, Paul George choose Los Angeles. It feels very coastal. There are not a lot of stars if this goes through in the middle of the country. Is this good for the league?
Well, obviously, talking NBA like this in the offseason is great for the league, right? Almost, if you want to call it hot stove like baseball, whatever. This is great. And it creates more storylines, and we get excited about it. If Harden were to go to Brooklyn, we can't wait to watch the Nets and see what that becomes. I also would say this, Colin. Right now, yeah, LA's got is hot. Brooklyn is hot. But I just think I even hesitate to say cyclical. It's just kind of the way it is these past few years. We could go back a few years and say LeBron chose Cleveland. We could say Westbrook chose to stay in Oklahoma City. Paul George chose Oklahoma City over the Lakers. So I think that I don't want to write off the small markets and say they can't get anybody and they're doomed. Nobody's choosing the Knicks, and that's the marquee market, you know, in the country. So I won't go that far. What it is, and I'm with you, Colin. I'm for player movement, player empowerment. I never killed LeBron for creating super teams, never killed KD for going to Golden State. But I'm going to be honest, there's a little bit of me that's just like, when I look at Brooklyn, and I could say the same thing about LeBron trying to go after Kawhi last year. You had Anthony Davis coming. Now you need Kawhi? And when I look at Brooklyn, I'm like, KD, you're great on paper. Not just Kyrie, who's awesome, but Jared Allen, Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, some really talented role players around you. And now you want to add James Harden? There's a sentiment, there's a little bit of you that's like, do dudes want to compete? I mean, really, like, we got to get every single star to play with us. It bothers me a little bit. I haven't killed those guys, and I won't. But I look back at a quote Jerry Krause had about Michael Jordan. He said he never came to me about trading for players. He never came to me about drafting players. He never came to me asking to add a player. He thought he was so darn good that he could win with anybody. There's a little of me that likes that. And I'm telling you, when you debate the GOAT, that comes up.
Yeah.
So that's all I'll say about
these that's okay. I don't necessarily disagree. So sometimes I see a trade. I remember years ago when I saw the Pau Gasol trade to the Lakers. I was on a plane on a tarmac, and I'm like, what? How did they get Pau Gasol? How did that work out? So now right. Dennis Schroeder is not Pau Gasol. But he's an 18-point-a-game guy. He's young. He's athletic. And reportedly, he's going to the Lakers, and they're not giving up much. And I thought, what? That's kind of, it feels a little bit like a little steal for the Lakers here. I mean, Dennis Schroeder's a real player, right?
No question. There was talk, remember, they get DeMar DeRozan for Kuzma and Danny Green. And this is better. Well, obviously, you didn't have to give up Kuzma. But you also got, I think, a better fit in Dennis Schroeder, who shoots it well enough where he won't shrink the floor for LeBron and AD. We know they need spacing. He can create plays for himself and others off the dribble. He's got a lot of swag to him, which I like. He showed in OKC playing with Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander that he can play on the ball or off the ball. So I like it a lot. Colin, part of what I'm hearing is that KD is saying, look, how are we going to beat those two studs with the Lakers, Anthony Davis and LeBron? And it's like, we need a third star that they don't have. And that's part of the impetus for all of this Harden talk, because here's the thing. The Lakers are going to be better, assuming LeBron doesn't fall off. And it's coming at some point. But assuming he has another year where he's a top play, you know, the top player in the league or top three player in the league, Anthony Davis is going to be a lot better with the confidence from winning the championship, knowing he can get it done. And now you add in Schroeder, who's better than Rajon Rondo at this stage. Yeah, Lakers going to be a handful.
Good stuff. Chris Broussard, Odd Couple, you and Rob Parker, weekdays 7 to 10 Eastern, Fox Sports Radio and iHeartRadio. It's great seeing you, bud.
You too, man. You too.
All right. It's wet out there in New Jersey. Stay dry. It's heating up in L.A. and it's getting wet in New Jersey. That Patriots-Ravens weather is just, it's all encompassing on the East Coast right now. Yeah, it's, you know, it is funny about the whole player. You know, like I can see people in Portland and Sacramento and you know, Indiana and, oh, we don't have our guys. But the reality is, owners in the NBA, they don't want to give out, like baseball, like 10-year contracts, because their fear is we give a guy 10 years, he doesn't have to play hard. And unlike baseball, we don't have 162 games, right? We got a salary cap. We need our stars to play great. And so the NBA owners would rather, you know, have shorter contracts. And then, you know, NBA stars get, you know, 1 year away from the end of their contract, and they're like, no, I want to move. Listen, it's no fun to play 82 games on a bad team. And I think James Harden looks at it and think, Westbrook wants out, and my coach, who, by the way, is a great offensive coach, is out, and the GM's a real sharp guy, and he is out, and it's...
I mean, you can also just have a really well-run organization and win that way, too. The Spurs have done it. They're not in a big market.
No, you can do it. You have
to
draft.
You can hire the right coach, and you can draft well. You have that option as well. You don't have to have superstars come in free agency.
And I also thought San Antonio got the right star. Like, Tim Duncan did not want, I mean, like, Tim Duncan's jeans, T-shirt.
Draft accordingly. Draft personalities that fit within your organization. It's not really rocket science. Look at what the Warriors did. You can talk about Kevin Durant coming to the Warriors, but they drafted Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Like, yeah.
You can actually build a winning organization in the NBA without having free agent stars come to you.
Yeah, I mean, the reason they could afford KD is because they paid Steph and KD, or Klay Thompson. They didn't draft them number one.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you can cry me a river about stars moving around, or you can run your organization the right way.
Yeah, good stuff. Totally agree. John Johnson, Rams safety, Max Crosby, Raiders pass rusher extraordinaire, both join us last hour in the Herd.